Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery. Code Wondery.
There's a lot to say when buying a new home or car, but only one thing to say that can help you protect them. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. And just like that, a State Farm agent will be there to help you choose the coverage you need, no matter where you are in life. When you need coverage options, your State Farm agent is there to help, on the phone or in person. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Welcome to the Nerds Podcast number 572. The guest who's on this very episode was on At Midnight last night, Kyle.
Oh, really?
Yes. And he crushed.
Did he?
Kevin Smith and Justin Long, who's also in the movie Tusk that Kevin was promoting, and Jen Kirkman. It was a great panel.
That does sound like a murderer's row of At Midnighters.
People are really starting to get comfortable coming on the show, and it's totally like the episodes we're doing now are different than in the beginning, where everyone was trying to figure out like what's the show and what's the tone and what's the tempo. And
I like the idea when you say they're comfortable. They're like girls in high school and they're coming in pajama pants.
They're coming in emotional pajama pants.
Okay, that's good. Emotional pajama pants. That should be a hashtag.
That's a band that we should start. Emotional pajama pants. EPP.
Ooh, that's even got good initials.
Yeah, you know me. I hate myself.
Look, the 90s is strong inside you. You can't fight it.
Yeah, no. Please help me.
It's in a pair of parachute pants trying to crawl out of you, like in that 90s movie, Bullworth.
Yeah, oh my God, Bullworth.
I've been listening to a lot of Ghetto Superstar recently.
Wow, the Warren Beatty movie.
Right?
Where he basically is like a politician who like snaps.
And he falls in love with
Halle Berry. Well, who wouldn't
fall
in love with Halle Berry and completely, and he does.
Yeah.
Wow, Bullworth.
The lines Old Dirty Bastard has in the song, the theme from Bullworth, are totally in unintelligible lyrics. It's
now,
amazing.
My ex-girlfriend Janet and I always used to play this game where, and I don't know why we thought this was funny, but it used to crack us up, where we would say, I haven't seen a movie like that since ... And we would try to come up with the weirdest like 90s reference we could think of. That, like a movie like that where you hadn't thought about it in a long time. So you'd go, our go-to was always like, I haven't seen a movie like that since Road to Wellville.
And are you describing my perfect game?
That always cracked us up. And so Bullworth, I haven't seen a movie like that since Bullworth.
A weird running joke in a 90s reference? I am in.
Yeah.
The race is on.
Well, the next time you see Janet, if you see her, you could just drop that. You just drop that and see if she responds. I almost guarantee you she'll say Road to Wellville.
Oh, okay. Good to know. That's her go-to. I like it.
Yeah, if you're listening to this.
I haven't seen that since Inventing the Abbots.
Oh, nice. Oh, fantastic. If anyone's listening, you can say to @JanetVarney on Twitter, # Road to Wellville. She's not going to know what the fuck happened. Continuing the game.
Oh, that makes me so happy.
We had this long-running game in our relationship. When, in the very beginning, for some reason, I had a little tiny cardboard bookmark that was a promotional item from the original Alien vs. Predator. And I don't remember how this happened. This is just a personal relationship meme. It would turn up, like, she found it one day, and I was like, oh, yeah, I put it in that folder. And so she responded by putting it in a weird place that I would then discover by mistake. And so for years, and sometimes it would go away for 6 months, which made it even, then I would find it and then, like, put it in, you know, like, for instance, like a half and half container emptied out and put it in there and then pour it out. And then like, there would be AVP.
I love how calculated that is.
That game.
Because you're playing the waiting game every day.
Exactly. You don't know when it's going to happen. And then you would forget. And then you hear from the other room, God damn it. and then it would disappear and then turn up again at a later date.
By the way, I hope that when she looks at # Road to Wellville, she'll be like, I haven't thought of that movie since Road to Wellville.
Wait a minute. But I, I know, so much fun. We'd like to thank them for sponsoring this episode of Nerds Podcast, which is Kevin Smith. I think this is a threequel.
It's the hat trick.
Yeah, he's been on which made sense because he was wearing a hockey jersey.
That's why I wrote it.
Well, you could just say Kevin Smith and you would know that he was wearing a hockey jersey. But I have so enjoyed being friends with Kevin. Such a great guy.
He's the best.
And I say on the podcast, his episode of our podcast was one of my favorites of all time. The first time, you know, like the very first time that he was on, we did it at Mountcastle. And his movie Tusk is out in theaters this Friday, September 19th. And he's a fucking great guy and very insightful and, you know, and just a go out and do your own shit kind of a guy. And I have all the respect in the world for him. So, ladies and gentlemen, the Nerdist Podcast, number 572 with Kevin Smith.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
I'm still a fan cop out. Like the one guy.
I just ran into.
You didn't have to say Rashida. The one guy.
No, I did. Yeah, I did.
Three.
I did.
I ran into Rashida Jones. We were just at the Fox lot, and she was walking in to pitch something, man. And the whole time, I'm like, I'm trying to explain to Andy. I was with my friend Andy. He's like, oh, I know her, blah, blah, blah. I was like, yeah, you know her parents, and doing the fucking, like, the lineage thing, where I'm like, that's the daughter of Quincy Jones and fucking Peggy Lipton, one most beautiful woman ever on TV. And I said it loud and she heard me. It's really fucking embarrassing, because, and it's weird, like, it's somebody who's a friend, so it's like somebody going, why would my friend talk about me in that very third person gross kind of way?
Oh, I was just doing a character about a guy who would dare to talk about his friend.
That's what I do with fake friends. With you, I'm reals. I never do sketches with you.
I don't do bits.
I was thinking about how every once in a while, now that we're almost 600 episodes of the podcast in, first episode that we did with you at Smodcastle.
Vader Pussy.
Still one of my
people write. They still hashtag Vader
Pussy. Episodes we've ever done.
Oh, that's awesome.
Because I didn't know you at the time really at all, and we just instantly like our I don't know.
We were all on the same page.
It was so much fun.
And I laughed, like seriously, like laughed out loud. You know, it's always fun when people say funny shit. You're like, oh, that's fucking funny. But like when you seriously somebody makes you laugh and you're just like, ah. That happened. If you listen to that recording, that happened a lot. There was some funny shit. And I love the cartoon. Remember my fucking made the cartoon?
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Did, National Treasure. Yeah. You know, the classic film National Treasure.
Just watch the cartoon. You're going to have to do it again.
So you're still mad.
I'm still pissed off.
He's not going to make another one, Matt. You don't have to.
You're right.
Now you got a Phoebe shirt on, which
I
is
know.
Nice.
These are Brandon. Hot off the presses, guys. Get your Phoebe shirts.
It's a beautiful fucking shirt, man.
Do you sell the many cue from him? Are you wearing your own shirt?
Because
that's yeah, look at me. I'm one half of these beards. You can see, man, that it's a shirt. It's designed in such a way that the two beards will cup your man boobs so perfectly. And you know I'm talking to you, gentlemen.
Do you sell the hockey jerseys?
I don't, and people keep asking, but it would be ridiculous if we sold them because they become pricey. The blanks themselves are like 60 to begin with. Mm-hmm. And then the crest, once you make the crest, there's a price to make the plate. And then, you know, they can make as many as you want. So you're already looking at, like, in order to upsell that, you can't just sell it for what you made it for.
Right.
Close to $100 for this. It's like the joke's over. Like, I thought about you for being a second, but no fucking for $100.
But also, it's an $80 joke, but $100.
And it felt, I remember there was a company called Abby Shot Clothiers, they were called. And one day, they're out of Canada. They said, we want to do the Silent Bob coat. And I said, right on, man. Go ahead. That'd be awesome. Like, they did the Matrix coats. Like, this was just as, like, cosplay was kind of, like, hitting more of the mainstream, not the hardcore or underground. But it was online. There were people like, oh, I want to dress like Neo, which is so fucking strange. Like, you know, to wear that jacket. You really got to be Neo to pull that off. Silent Bob, you just have to be fat. So I understood when they came to me and they were like, this is going to be a big seller. I was like, big and big. I know what you're saying. So I signed up with them. I said, go ahead. And it was like something ridiculous. Anytime they sell a coat, we'd like send me 10% or something. But it gave me a place to point people when they were like, I want to dress like my friend's B&J. I want to be Silent Bob. So I could be, oh, go buy this coat. But Abby Shot, they pride themselves on not just like, this kind of looks like it. It's, this is pitch perfect. So their Matrix jacket was like $800, $500 or something like that. So the Silent Bob coat, which is a coat that I had bought in a store called Oak Tree. In the late 80s, kids, in the malls.
The Oak Tree store?
Do you remember?
Oh, my God.
That was during my urban phase where I was like, I want to dress like a Cosby kid. And they had these. They had
Oak
these.
Tree.
It was the only place where a young white male could go buy a mustard vest.
Yeah.
And rock it over like a pair of a shirt that had little dudes with high top fade cuts on.
Or like a lime green zoot suit with wingtips.
Dude, I had a purple jacket that had a built-in vest inside, which you could button out, but it was so Joker perfect. I was like, how come more people aren't shopping at this store? It was cosplay before cosplay, because I was like, I'm dressing like someone far cooler than I am.
By cos, you mean Cosby Show.
Absolutely. Oh,
I like that you were going.
That was so good.
I like that you were saying that. It's like I was my urban face.
I feel
so
fucking
like
shitty.
A Cosby kid.
I'm sorry. We have to stop because I'm like, come on. How did I not see that? That was beautiful. I bow to thee.
You know, comedy is like Boggle. You know what I mean? It's like the game Boggle.
You got the right dice.
All the answers. You get like all the answers are there, but you can't always see them.
It's true, man. It's perspective. All right, so there I am. I bought at the Oak Tree. It was just at the tail end of it when they realized like no, people aren't buying this shit except for the fat guy who comes in every other week. So they had this closing sale rack, and they had winter coats on them because it was August. So I bought that Silent Bob coat, the one that's in the movies, literally for $10 on discount. So now if you go try to buy it from Abby Shot Clothiers, they make a replica. They had to go find the fucking materials.
Oh,
they stopped making that coat. Now, who knows? Maybe they made like 500 before they stopped or whatever. But they had to go back and double it and whatnot. And if you want to buy the Silent Bob coat now, I think it's like $400 for a $10 coat, man, that I bought on a fucking sale rack in the 80s. But I always knew that that coat had magic. Remember fucking Chaplin?
Yeah.
Where he's like, he fucking sees the hat shit like that? It wasn't quite that, but I saw the magic $10 sign. I was like, $10. I can afford that magic. But that coat, I always willed into everything. I was like, I'm going to wear that in here. I'm going to wear it in here. And it wound up being the Silent Bob coat.
Well, I think someone could just raid.
Did you have to? Did you end up having to get duplicates made for like Jane Silent Bob's right there?
They did. And they did. It was weird. It was like being a Batman figure where they do 9 variants where it's like, this is the winter Batman. This is the scuba Batman. I had one coat that I could wear in 100-degree heat, and it was made of like almost felt. So it looked like a heavy winter coat, but it was light as hell. Then I had one that was made of wool, so I could shoot in Hoth and still never change one of my 3 expressions that, you know, that communicated Silent Bob.
Silent Bob aquatic armor.
But it was also like, it was like the John Travolta pants. Like, you know, they say, I've heard early on in my career, they were like, John Travolta's got 2 sets of pants. I was like, he must be rich. And they're like, no, on a movie set, at lunchtime, they change his pants. So pre-lunch, he wears 1 pair of pants. I don't know if this is fucking true, but I always want to believe it because it sounds amazing. This is post-Pulp Fiction, during the John Travolta resurgence.
Right.
Pre-lunch, he has 1 pair of pants. At lunch, part of his lunch was a bundt cake.
What?
Like a whole bundt cake? I'm not
That's
kidding.
That's my dream.
I know. That's why I thought he was the coolest person on earth. I was like, after you get, like, you come back with Pulp Fiction, I'm like, what do you want? He's like, a bundt cake.
Wow.
So he had a bundt cake at lunch, whatever they served, and a bundt cake. He liked bundt cake. And he would consume a bundt cake so that after lunch, they would have a second pair of pants that was 1 size larger.
Oh, for the... That's crazy!
Because, you put on... You eat a bundt cake, it's going to fucking show.
Eventually, yeah. Especially as you age, it's a little harder to keep those bundt cake pounds off.
It truly is. But I took a page out of his book. So in the hockey jerseys, some are goalie cut.
Okay.
Some are not. So I could fluidly move between both. And the hockey jersey is such a... I've realized later in life, like, it's become such a, you're that fucking fat prick in a hockey jersey, that if I remove it and put on something else, it's like an invisibility cloak, like Harry Potter invisibility cloak, because you just fall off the radar. They can track you in those colors, but the moment I put on, like, a fucking black thing, I'm just like average fat guy walking around.
Mischief managed.
Yes.
The Travolta career path is so fascinating. That because there was that period like before Pulp Fiction, there was like 10 years.
There was he had the baby movies where he was like second
talking.
Fiddle.
Oh, yes, Look Who's Talking. I'm
but
so
prior
sorry.
Prior to that,
right.
There was like a drought of but, like he's in the movie about the 2 dudes who go to communist Russia.
Yes, they're in the town.
Yes.
That Ari Gross was the other guy in that movie.
Yes.
That movie was what was that movie called? Not The Defectors, but it was something like that.
Yes.
And it was
It didn't have a theatrical release. It was one of the, if I remember correctly, it was the curse of the early 80s, early 90s, it was a straight to video release.
Yes.
And when that happened, that was like, nowadays you're like, straight to video, fucking of course, VOD, same day. Yeah, it was like, that's
the model. People don't go to movie theaters.
But back then it was like, if your movie went straight to video before theatrical, people were like, ooh, what happened? And that was one of those movies where they tested it, and it just, people were like, who are these two old men?
Yeah. Because
it was before the Travolta resurgence.
Basically, the plot of the movie was that these two guys are recruited by like the CIA or something to, they're like nightclub promoters or something like that.
So it's a comedy.
It's a comedy. And they go to this town and they don't, and it's this like perfect American town, kind of like a Footloose town.
Yeah.
And what you find out in the movie is that it's actually an American town that they've recreated in Russia.
Mm.
And so they're actually all Russian spies and they're trying to basically like infiltrate America. And then so, and I remember it not being like a terrible...
I refuse to be like a 70s kid and be like, what was it called? And die wanting to know. Talking. What is it?
There's basements.
No, it's not basements. Nope.
You got to go down to, I would say it was pre-Pulp Fiction. I'm going to say it's 86 to 94. While he's looking it up, I'll keep it going.
So Pulp Fiction's 94, right?
So it's got to be, this is like, I'm saying 87 and 94 is the corridor on this movie. And it was one of these flicks that
the
like,
experts.
That's it, the experts. It tested so poorly, they're like, oh, let's just put it out straight to video. It's not a bad movie, but you sit there watching it going like, how long was this list and why did they arrive at these two guys?
Yeah.
Like, you know, I like Eric Gross and I like John Travolta, but neither of them were at their peak. And it was actually like a Cold War concept that could have fucking sold.
Right.
And then somebody woke up and was just like, this isn't working. And they didn't fucking release it. But well, yet you and I remember it.
I think it was in the wake of the Spies Like Us.
I fucking love Spies Like Us. It's a flawed movie, but it's like one of the last John Landis movies of that early John Landis cycle, like
right.
of the same cloth as an Animal House or a American Werewolf in London or something like that.
Right.
Spies Like Us was kind of the last gasp. I think after that it was like Beverly Hills Cop 3 for John Landis, and that felt like a completely different beast.
Right. Well,
if you want to listen to an audio commentary of Beverly Hills Cop 3, download Phoebe episode 26 where I make Mosier watch it.
It's not enough where you're wearing a shirt. You got to fucking.
Well, you know,
it's like
audio,
flaunting
audio
your
podcast.
Affair in my face. You're
guys,
like, I fucked your husband.
And I had so much more fun than Kevin and Mosier.
When I went away with him that one weekend.
Louder, Mosier, louder. Talk louder into the microphone.
You're the host. You're not the co-host. You're the host.
Yeah.
With the most.
Hey, Scott, it's Myra. Whatever you're not getting from Kevin, I can get you.
Oh, you son of a bitch. You found a weakness in my army. You stole my man. He has a blast. It's nice. By the time I finally got up to five different podcasts, he was like, I'm doing another one too. And I was like, what? But he has an absolute blast doing that show. But yes, you made him watch it.
We watched it together. It was not.
Were you pro or con?
I was on board because it was a movie that was on. I feel like it was like when my friends had a black box. It was constantly playing, like on Showtime and on. So I saw it dozens of times, and I remember
when you say black box, is that a cable channel in the 80s that only showed black actor films? I'm not familiar with that.
A Vampire in Brooklyn play.
Harlem Nights.
Oh my god! What an amazing
movie. But it turned out to not be a thoroughly enjoyable experience to watch.
Was
that
it PG?
Movie.
Was it PG-13?
Yeah, it was PG-13.
No,
it's some weird. Some
I don't think you're allowed. You can't go backwards when you establish a character's R,
exactly.
And then it's one thing. Like, there's nothing wrong with PG-13. Like, if you're talented people can make that rating fucking sing and work. It's crazy. You watch Bad News Bears, they didn't have PG-13 at the time. Lord knows they'd probably try to give it an R today. But the original Bad News Bears, PG fucking movie, man. And it is like still holds up, one of the funniest things you'll ever see.
But would never get made that way today because
Richard Linklater made one.
I know, but I'm saying like the way that they did it then. Like the kids are swearing and drinking and they're super racist.
Yes. Like, they dropped out a lot. They swore a little in the remake, but it was like that era is just gone. And in terms of, it's not like we're sitting here as four white guys going, why can't you make racist jokes like they did
in the
70s?
No, not at all. But,
it's very like...
You'd never make it now.
No, and you can't make anything like that in terms of like Michael Ritchie, the director, he directed Fletch. He also directed... speaking of Eddie Murphy, The Golden Child. Yeah, he directed that too. He got a performance out of these kids that weren't actors. Tatum O'Neill, of course, was one, Paper Moon and stuff.
Fucking Jackie Earl Haley.
Fresh off a field somewhere. And Tanner and Ogilvy and Engelbert, all these kids were not like actors. It's not like, oh, I saw these kids like in many commercials or sitcoms. He got them fresh. And you watch that movie, it plays like a fucking documentary. Never plays like set up punchline. It literally feels like reality TV, like it's just happening. Yeah. It is so insanely well-crafted, man. And the whole time you're watching, you're like, there's no way this is... In today's world, it would at least be an R. They'd probably have to fight to get a PG-13, but it sailed in the 70s on a PG, man.
So many things I want to hit. So first of all, I watched Fletch again the other night. Still totally holds up. Mm. Fletch lives. That's very sad.
Why did you watch Fletch? Are they coming to you going, play Fletch?
No one's asking me to play Fletch.
Are they asking you to act yet?
No one ever asked me
to. They ask you to host everything, but have they asked you to act?
Yeah, no one ever asked me to act in anything.
Do you want to? If they were like, hey man, we want you to act. Like, we don't want you to fall down the Dane Cook trap, but we think like you're funny and you've also got a wide audience. Why don't you stand in front of the camera and say these fake things?
First of all, I have no desire to like try to carry a movie. Right. I just want to be, if I were going to, it would have to be something cool, maybe something, you know, comedy or sci-fi, something right. fun.
Something that makes sense in your world.
Yeah. Absolutely. And it would have to, I would want it to be like a weird character. Like I would never
want a side guy.
Yeah, I would want to be like side guy. I would never want to be like main guy.
You're the dude in Avengers who was playing the video game.
Exactly. Yeah, like,
missed opportunity there for Wii.
But I don't... I know. God damn it.
The movie could have done something had you been the guy playing Galaga.
I don't need to... Like, I don't have any delusions that, you know, like, I want to try to, like... Because like, a lot of... I think what happens a lot of times is you see people make commerce choices, like short-term commerce choices over like interesting choices.
Right.
That's why I always love Lisa Kudrow out of Friends. She picked the coolest fucking movies to
Comeback
do.
Comeback is one of the...
Back.
One, it's coming back.
Back.
One of the most brilliant shows ever
but
made.
But all the movies that she did out of Friends were like, those are interesting, cool, fun movies and not like...
Ed.
Not like Ed.
Yeah.
You know?
So where, you're saying if you can have Lisa Kudrow's career, then you'll act. Fair enough, dude.
I'm just saying...
Hollywood. Tee it up. Kudrow 2.
I'm just saying it would have to be like something cool, and right. you know, like.
But it's a no-brainer, and you know you could do it. I mean, in a world where you fucking could do comedy, when you do podcasts,
nobody ever asks, and I don't pursue
That's
it.
That's shocking to me.
No, and I just don't pursue it.
Well, I mean, you don't have to pursue it. Like, to me, it's a no-brainer. It's like, put Hardwick in. He's got a lot of followers.
I just assume, like, if the right thing comes along, then I would, which would be fine.
Piece of shit.
You heard that? Chris is so into talking like, that he just rode right over it.
You know why that didn't register as a blip? Because that's how they think.
That's currency now, dude. Now when they send you, I'm in the process of making another movie. After we wrap Tusk, we went right to Yoga Hosers. We just wrapped that for 3/4 shoot, and then we finish it in March when Mr. Depp is done with his movie. But now I'm back in the world where they send you headshots and shit like that. And at one point, we were trying to cast a role in the movie, and they sent me a bunch of names of you know 20 to 25-year-old actors. But under it, as well as like, here's a link to their IMDb page, and here's like the most current shit they did. Right under it was like, here's their Twitter follower.
Oh shit!
Here's their Facebook following.
Oh,
here's
shit.
Their Instagram following.
Fuck.
And in fact, like one of the agencies was trying to cast somebody who was not an actor at all, just an Instagram guy who's an Instagram celebrity. Mm. And they're like, this dude's the bomb. And I was like, well, I'm sure
you
he
have
is.
To be very leery. First of all, anyone who uses that term.
Yeah, I was like, wait, see, what year is this? They're like 1992.
This
I'm
dude's
like,
the bomb.
I'm time
have you seen his MySpace top 8? Yeah.
Like, he knows all the crisscross lyrics. I was
you know,
once all
talking- shit on sailing because that's a real. Mellow song.
No, not Christopher Stone. Cross. Crisscross.
Fair enough.
The bus. I was walking by when I was working in the E building. I was walking by an office, and these two guys were having an argument, and the door was open, and they were talking about a host. And the guy says, "Like, I don't care if he's a better host. This guy has so much more Twitter followers."
Oh yeah, well that's right. That is.
I'm
the
telling
currency.
You, there's a currency
because they're
a
scrambling
reason.
To get their stuff marketed.
The nice thing is, it's like it's certainly not why we've all been doing it for the last few years, but it's nice to know that there's a silver lining to all that Instagramming and all that Facebooking and tweeting and stuff. That's in our business, at least, somebody is like, oh, that means something, because that's the only dick I got. Otherwise, I'm no neck, all meat and potatoes. So at least if you put my box office up there, people are like, eh. If you put my Twitter followers or my Facebook or whatever, people are like, oh, he's interesting.
Well, what's interesting about it is that it's the thing that's more about you than what a lot of the other factors are before. It's like, what's his box office and what is his, you know, like, is he hot? Right. You know, it's like, you know, it's your pictures, your ideas, your thoughts, your, you know, your podcasts. And those are all the things that like that all organically grew out of who you were because people want, you know, like they enjoy that experience. And so it is an interesting currency now. But, you know, I don't know.
For a second, it looked like we were going to the deep end of the pool, and then you were like, I don't know, too deep.
We can talk about it.
That was amazing. I was like, look at him. He's about to swim. All right, let's go.
What do you want to... No, but like, in what sense?
We didn't have anywhere to go with that. You're like, it is kind of... Now that I think about it, yeah. We could just close that and move on.
No, but I think...
Social media is important. Let's just say, kids... Stay off my booze. There you go.
It's important to. It's important in the sense that you know, for our business, because individuals became empowered as opposed to, you know, marketing. Like you could cripple a marketing team. Like, you know, you and I have more collective followers than like all of the studios put together.
Totally.
So that actually says something really interesting about like the rise of the individual and the rise of the niche audience and essentially flipping the power triangle, you know, from being a top down to like a bottom up model. So we're all in the bottom and now we have some control.
Everything went niche, you know. It's like nobody can earn on a macro level unless you're like putting hundreds of millions of dollars into something. So now they've realized, oh man, like you don't need the a massive audience to make a living. You need 1,000 followers. And ardent enough to come see you whenever you do a live show or something like
The 1,000 true followers, yeah.
That's it, man. But, so now they do that in media as well, where they're like, well, like, it doesn't matter. Like, now they're now starting to pay attention way more to YouTube and Instagram and also Vine. It's crazy, like, the things they bring up now. Casting people or studio side, if you let them, it's just like, really, that's the new barometer? That makes me fucking happy, though, because I'm like, that means I'm still relevant. My finger's still on the pulse. Like, they're saying words to me that I understand. You know, if they were like Tinder, I'd be like, what? But like Instagram and Facebook and Twitter, I can still get my head around, and it's a world that I still live in. And it feels though like I've been in it so long that they're arriving very late,
yeah,
as we're all heading someplace else, which I don't know what that is. I'm certainly not saying I'm abandoning all these other things, but it feels like Twitter and Facebook and now Instagram, which is kind of part of Facebook, have dominated for a while, and it feels like something else is about to come. I don't know what that is, and I doubt I'll be involved in it. Like, well, Snapchat. My kid does Snapchat all the time, and I'm like, I don't get it. What do you mean it doesn't stick around forever? What's the point of doing all this if nobody's going to see it a week from now? It makes absolutely no sense. And she's like, Dad, it's for sending dick pics. I'm like, oh, all right. Well,
carry on, keep showing
people your dick then. Like a good daughter. Yeah. Thank you very much.
But niche,
making your father proud.
Niche now, I think, doesn't even have to mean small anymore. I think it just means hyper-focused.
Yes. Because they know that your audience, those 1,000 people that follow you, they're like, all right, well, if they follow them to this, will they follow them to this? And they can count on that audience.
Yeah, the movie that you and it's in the Kevin Smith film club. It's Losers Take All,
yes.
Which is, I fucking love that movie.
I saw you on Twitter. I started.
I fucking love it. It's so good. But like, I watched it and I was like so invested in it. And then afterwards, I started thinking about. I was telling people about it. And I was like, oh wow, like some people wouldn't get like the conversation. They have conversations about Husker Du signing to. You know, Warner Brothers and like.
But for you, you're like,
yeah,
it's breathtaking.
Yeah,
somebody said Husker Du.
Yeah, it was beautiful. Right. I fucking loved it. But like, it's
but
like
that
it's
is
very,
for a very select
focused.
Audience.
Yeah.
Where back in the day, a studio or a mini major, as they were called back then, would take a roll of the dice. Like my whole career begins because Harvey Weinstein sells Miramax to Disney, and in the press, which is not the internet what it is now, but then still in the press, there were people sniping about what would happen to Miramax. Like all the interesting films will stop happening now that they're part of the fucking Disney family. So I kind of got in on this little window where because they had to make a statement about like, oh, fucking, we're still making fucking indie films. They went to Sundance that year and there was this fucking really scrappy, really foul mouth, anti-Disney American independent film that they could be like, people like it? Great. We're buying that. And it makes a statement, man. Suddenly they come through the door going, we're still doing what we used to do. We still got edge, even though we're owned by these guys. So in the beginning, it used to, like, the Weinsteins were so smart about going, like, you don't need everybody. You just need this many people.
Right.
And if you strategically sell it or if you position it in such a way as, like, The Crying Game, where it's like, you got to see this movie. We're not going to tell you what happens in it, man, but there's a dick, you know, or something like that. Spoilers. Suddenly they turned it into like must-see TV in the cinemas. And when you watched indie film world grow. But then it kind of got to this breaking point where, like, you're making $50 to $75 million quote unquote indie films,
right?
And the whole thing caved in on itself, and every studio got rid of all their boutiques and stuff. Like, Disney sold Miramax and bought Marvel, you know, much better investment and shit. Look how much money they're making. So it changed, everything changed, and for a while indie film was just kind of non-existent except for the mumblecore kids, mm-hmm, and stuff. Yeah. But after that, man, there was no more, like, you know, $1 to $5 million indie film. Certainly not the mid-range or middle budget film, but mid-range budget film that used to exist, the $20 to $30 million Must Love Dogs or something like that. Right. And I'm certainly not advocating more Must Love Dogs, but,
well, I think we should reboot it.
You know,
Cusack. Right.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I think we should reboot it.
When it's on, I watch it. I yeah. never fucking go like, Must Love Dogs, suck my dick. I go, Must Love Dogs. I'm watching it. But in any event, that kind of went away. So this new model has kind of popped up where, you know, people are just like, just make it for that person's audience or go there. Like, for me, I got to a place where I priced myself out of doing interesting shit for a long time because my salary kept going up based on my contract with, like, Miramax or the Weinstein Company. They pre-schedule what you're going to make, you know, third film, fourth film, fifth film. And it's not like, if your movie does this, then on this film, like, no, this is what you're making in the future, man. And soon you're making more money to write and direct a film, or at least I was, and this was in the heydays before the financial collapse and stuff, back when Miramax was owned by Disney. They would pay me more to make a fucking movie, write and direct a movie, than was budgeted to pay for all of Mallrats when it happened.
Oh,
and
God.
You get to a place where, now, my ideas were not mainstream and never will be. So it was never like, okay, my salary's going up and now I've just been holding on to the mainstream shit until I was getting paid the mainstream bucks and here's my big mainstream dick. I'd whip out the same little no-neck, all-head, all-balls dick on a budget that was closer
to
mainstream.
$100 bill.
Exactly. I'm like, look at it.
Well, that it's is all more about appealing. The budget. It's more appealing. Yeah. More appealing.
So at that point, you're kind of like, shit, man, I can't do the shit that got me here. Like, what got me here was a mind snap many years ago based on wanting to see a movie that I recognized you and him and him, who I didn't know yet, but I'll just phrase it this way. Back then in the day, I loved comedy. I loved Animal House, but I never identified with the Deltas because they killed a horse, and I would never kill a horse, even by accident and shit. And so, like, you could always go so far. You can root for the underdogs in those movies, but I never saw myself reflected. You know, so I always want to see me and my friends, or the people like us, the people that now they make tons of fucking movies about. Dudes who sit around and talk about other movies. That's their fucking language in order to talk about relationships and fucking Star Wars and pussy and all that shit that I never saw anybody else doing movies and stuff. And I was always like, why won't they make a movie that's like about me and my friends and not about us specifically, because, you know, obviously why would they, but just that, why can't I see us up there, and like, why don't I see me and my friends? And I bitch about it for a long fucking time, and one day it fucking hit me, man, and it was like the awakening moment. And it was probably shortly after I saw Richard Linklater's Slacker film, because I was going like, there was a mind snap. There's this moment where I was like, Kevin, nobody gives a fuck about you and your friends. Nobody will ever make any entertainment about you and your friends. If anyone's going to make anything about you and your friends, it's got to be you. So I went and made Clerks, and that changed my fucking life. So years later, 20 years later almost, I'm sitting around on one of these dopey podcasts that we all love doing so much with a guy that cheats on me behind my back over here.
No, he does it in front of your face.
He does. He really just sucks him off, like looking at me with those eyes. So look at me.
You've been cuckolded by Myra.
It is. I'm under there, man. I'm like, I'm doing the fucking lick while he's fucking. Like, it's real awkward. Face planting, I believe it's called.
You never moan like that with me.
Yeah, I cry when it goes
it's
on.
It's like one of those Russian sell your girlfriend videos. Come on, guys. We all know what we're talking about.
It was really embarrassing because he bought me an extra small, really small genital cuff. It was really
sad. I laughed
Russian
at you.
Sell your girlfriend videos. What was it? What did you say?
I don't know. What did you say?
What?
I don't
we
know
were
what
over on
about.
Genital cuff. You were talking about Russians. We could have had such a party if we put those two thoughts together. I was on one of those podcasts with Mosier. I talked about it, I think, a while ago, man. I've talked about it everywhere, and I'll be talking about it until I'm blue in the face for the next week because the movie comes out on Friday. But we did an episode of Smodcast where we talked about this dopey thing online we read from Gumtree.uk where a dude was like, you can live in my house if you dress up like a walrus for 2 hours every day, and I'll throw you fish and crab. See, it's funny. It captures your imagination right away. You go, oh,
that's,
God, that's weird. And it was, I found it online. You know, it was one of those things somebody tweeted at me, and we did a whole episode about it. And while I just re-listened to the episode this morning, the first half hour of it, and you can hear my mind snap again, man. It's awesome because I didn't have the first one on tape or any recording. It happened in real life. And you know me, there's nothing worth doing unless you can record it and podcast
it. Of course.
For others to absorb and go, yeah, well done, Kevin. He's still doing well. Bar is still low, but he's still doing well. We're still with you on your journey. So there I am. We sit there talking about this dopey story, and you can hear it on the podcast, me going like, oh my God, this could be a movie. And me and Mosier start building this fucking movie, same way we do on every fucking episode of this podcast, start doing dopey sketches and giggling and crap like that. But there's a moment where I get all serious, and it's because inside I was sitting there going, oh God, this sucks. Like, I fucking sit there every night and I roll through everything on Netflix and everything on Apple, on iTunes, looking for something that I just want to, like, oh, I don't know. I've never heard of this. Let me do this. And I see a sea of opportunity, but nothing, no purchase for my leaky boat. Like, nothing where I'm like, oh my God, that's the ultimate movie for me to watch right now. And as we were sitting there talking about it, I was like, that's the fucking movie I've been looking for. Like, I want to see the movie about a guy who turns another guy into a fucking walrus. Like, that's amazing. And I get sad inside because I'm like, why won't they fucking make this Hollywood? Like,
oh, well, you didn't see the Wilford Brimley documentary.
It was damn close.
I've been slowly turned into a walrus.
But they just didn't take it far enough. So I was sitting there, like, in the podcast, you literally hear me fucking, the mind snap kind of happens again, where I'm like, dude, nobody is ever going to make this stupid fucking walrus movie except you. So if you want to make it, go make it. And suddenly in the podcast, I'm like, oh, copyright Kevin Scott, man, because this is a horror movie. And we start building it. And so I said, hashtag it. I'm going back to Twitter, walrus yes. If you think it's a good idea, walrus no. If you don't think it's a good idea, the next morning I got up and I couldn't wait to see. Because I was really like, I'd submitted the script for Clerks 3 and the budget, and I was waiting on word from the Weinsteins as to whether or not we were going to be doing that. And I was back at this fucking place where I'm like, fuck, the world of gatekeepers, where I have to wait for somebody to say yes in order for me to practice some of my art. Fuck, I left this world. I was in the world of podcasting where I'm like, I want to do a show. And you sit down in front of a mic and it fucking
Well, yeah,
happens.
Because when we first podcast you three years ago, you were like, I'm quitting movies. Yeah, I'm done with it. I just want to fucking do podcasts. I don't want to deal with the
for
shit
that
anymore.
Very reason, because the intimacy and the immediacy of this medium is such that you just sit down with people you like and have a good fucking time and achieve something in the process. You know, if you talk for an hour, you're gonna have a show that fills a fucking slot. You're up to, like you said, up to episode 300 and shit, or what is 800,
almost 600. Yeah,
so it's like everything is usable, because we've proven by putting show after show out there that somebody out there is interested in the shit that we're interested in and then we talk about. So that's what's beautiful about this fucking medium. So I used the podcast that moment, and I used Twitter to be like, all right, man, if you think it's a good idea, cool. Next morning, everything, all of the tweets were walrus yes. And then there was one walrus no, and it was a dude going, I really mean walrus yes, but for the democratic process, I feel I should say no. And so at that point, I'm sitting there going, okay, I can wait for the phone to ring and Bob Weinstein to be like, you can give me click three. Or I could just, or as Bob Weinstein, or I can honor the kid that got me here. Like, you know, Clerks 3, I'm going to make it, I swear, and it's beautiful, but it's the third iteration of something I said 20 years ago. This walrus thing was batshit crazy and stupid, but it was new. Like, I hadn't done this before. The people aren't going to be like, oh, fucking walrus movie from Kevin Smith again, eighth one. They will eventually, but not on this one, not on the first one. So I sat there and I was like, fuck it, I'll start writing this. And they said walrus, yes, so they obviously think it's a good idea. I started writing. I gave the first few pages to my wife, and she doesn't really like anything I do. She liked Red State, but she's not into the Jane Son Bob stuff. She's like most film critics, man. It's like I married a film critic. So one of my film critics.
That's
not,
the thing.
Yeah, particularly of me.
Did you do that because you're like, I can turn one of them. I can turn one
Maybe
of them.
Subconsciously, but, you know, she's always like, Kevin, isn't it more important that I'm a fan of you? And I'm like, I don't think you understand me and my art at all. Me and my art are one.
Yeah. That's something like a mom says too, like, you know, I don't have to understand everything you do. Yeah, I love you because you're you.
Like, I don't get it, but I like that you're
some happy. People must.
I had one of those quote unquote big boned mothers who always told me I was big boned and the bones would change as I grew and stuff. So I know that feeling. So I showed it to her and she was like, this is weird. What is this? And she never listens to the podcast. So she didn't know that, like, me and Mosher had this conversation. So I was like, oh, it was me and Moj did this thing. And I thought she would immediately shut down. Because anytime I have a good time without her, fuck that. So if I'm enjoying, if I'm down the highway, hallway doing some podcasts and she hears us like, ah, 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 and I'm crying. Mm-hmm. Like, and I'm like gasping for breath. That never really makes her feel good. Like, good for Kevin. Right. It makes her go like, the fuck? Why does he laugh like that with me? You know? Yeah. So she doesn't listen to podcasts. So I thought I would tell her, like, hey man, this came from Smodcast, and she'd be like, would you stop this shit? Like, it's bad enough you do that all the time. But instead, she was like, I fucking like this. Is this Modcast? And I was like, yeah, man. We only do it in your house. We've been doing it for years. But she's like, finish writing this. She's like, I just finished reading a book, so I need something to read. So I was like, all right. And I went back and I continued writing. So I finished it and I put it up online. I put up online, like, I'm going to do this, man. I wrote a blog about, like, I'm going to move forward with this. And I'll be honest with you, it all comes back to, like, fucking our world and Twitter and shit like that. I put up, this Walrus Yes. I put up the episode, put up the hashtag and shit like that. The next day, people would listen to the episode a bunch. You know, you get a bunch of reactions, like, funny, blah, blah, blah. But there were a couple of reactions on Twitter and Facebook, and this was the tenor of the reactions, and it fucking stopped me dead in my tracks, and it made me go, oh, fucking, this is badass. We got an opportunity here, a teaching opportunity. There were a couple cats who were just like, is that it? Like, are you fucking serious? Is that allowed? Is that how you begin? Because me and Scott sat there, and we didn't, like, fucking pull out a magic trick bag of storytelling and start, you know, working alchemy to make a movie. We literally sat there, and I was like, remember in Act 3 of Iron Man when fucking Jeff Bridges comes out in a bigger suit? We'll fucking do a bigger suit, man. And I guarantee you go watch that Tusk, you'll never sit there and go, like, oh, they stole the Iron Man ending.
Right.
But it was part of the process. Sure. And there were a bunch of people sitting there listening who never, they want to get their miracle started. They just don't know how to self-start. And the beginning step, they're like, there must be a rule book. There must be some way to
do it. They're intimidated by their perception of what they think the process is. Yeah,
that it's a giant leap across a chasm. And all they heard was two dudes walking down the street just going like, oh, it could be like this movie. Oh, it could be like this movie. Oh, it could be like this. And they were mystified by it. Not everybody, but there were a few people. And that fucking grabbed me because I'm like, these are motherfuckers who would love to do what I do, just don't know how to get started. So I was like, maybe I can open source the whole fucking movie. Because this is very rare that you get an opportunity where they heard the moment of inspiration. Literally, you can go back to that podcast and add, ping, for the moment that I'm like, holy shit, this could be a movie. Because a year later, we're 6 months after the podcast went up, I was sitting on a set staring at the Apple guy going, action, and he's dressed like a walrus. So I'm like, from that point forward, it was like, I just kind of pushed the whimsy. It wasn't about like fucking like, this has got to happen. I was like, let's just see if we can make it happen. But part of the journey, man, part of the reason that I was like, fuck it, that'll fuel me. Because 20 years on anything, you start looking, that's 20 years on a career I'm in. You start looking for new reasons just to fucking do shit, just to make you fucking like, yeah, this is the reason I'll do it.
That's all you need. And it's like when you were asking me about movies, it's like I'm at a point where I only work on stuff that sounds fun to me.
Bingo.
That to me is like, oh yeah, I would love to work with those people. Or like, and that's the best reason to do anything. I want to see this thing exist and it sounds fun. Or that guy has a great idea for something that should exist and they're fun people and they're nice. And that's it. That's literally it.
For me, this one, I wanted to see the Dopey Walrus movie. It sounded fucked up. And I don't think I'd laughed that hard in a long time. And like, I was like, all these ideas are fucking wacky, stupid, and brilliant. Like, I want to see them come to life. But the idea of like, we got this audience. And, you know, for 20 years, they've been like fucking following and supporting. And like, you know, here's my fucking money. And cross their fingers like, fuck, it's not Clerks again. But they've been around for a while. They'll follow me to the podcast. Like, I was able to build something with the podcast where I could do whatever the fuck I want. Got to a place where I could be like, I'm only going to do things that make me fucking happy.
Yeah.
Made a living somehow off of fucking just sitting around talking, you know, to my friends, blah, blah, blah. And that's all because the audience is there, you know, to fucking go see us live, go support us. Those numbers that we talk about, apparently they fucking matter, you know, those social media numbers. So all that stuff matters. And it's like, you give them the podcast for free, you know, can't give them the movies for free because fucking nobody will let you do that. I tried. They get shitty. But the podcast, you can pump them full of fucking free and stuff. But it's like the ultimate give back to an audience that really cares about that process, about, say, in this instance, film. And also our audience is made up of a bunch of them who are like, I would like to take the same fucking journey you took or my variation of your journey. To be able to be like, okay, you literally heard the moment of inspiration. Now I'm going to take you all the way through to fucking premiere. I'm going to take you through to fucking theatrical. Like, lit a fire under my ass where I was just like, oh my God, they can see everything. And they can watch me, like, go for it and fail and the shit that we tried to do that didn't work. And Blumhouse was going to do it at one point and then they pulled out and shit. And, you know, I got to show them, too, that it wasn't like, well, it's just fucking, you made Clerks, of course you could do this. Bullshit. That Red State stuff, I burned my career to the ground, salted the earth, and was like, fuck you, so long, fraud, and thanks for all the fish. And so nobody wanted to work with me. So I was able to show them, like, you can fucking do this. Like, I literally sat here with Scott Mosier and said some of the dumbest things I've ever said in my life and had a blast doing it. it just requires some fucking follow through. And, you know, it's like, yeah, we found some cool people to give us money, this company Demarest, but they were the second time. First cats were like, fuck this. Unless you have a movie star, we're not making this movie. And for me at that point, I was like, you know, I asked my wife, I was like, you like the script, man. What if I can't get money? She's like, fuck it, put the house up. So it was going to happen either fucking way. And I felt like this is a perfect example to open source the whole fucking thing for the audience. Because the greatest gift you could give a man is like, you know, motherfucker, like, give a man a fish, teach a woman and man a fish, man, and fucking let them do this shit. You know, I sit there every day on a stage or in front of a microphone and say, do this, you could do this, it's fucking fun. And I meet people everywhere I go, and it's so awesome where they're like, I got a podcast, we're coming up in episode 20. What's it called? Ninja Turtle Ass Fucker. Oh, that's amazing. Because every name is some punk rock name where you feel like you're a part of something.
Did you just have the brain click thing just now after you said Ninja
Turtle
Ass
Fucker? Totally. I'm like, oh my God, I'm going home and recording
that
podcast.
Guys, I'll be back.
But it feels like we got to look at history and like punk rock happened without us and none of us musicians and we can never be a part of that, but we are part of some weird fucking talk punk rock movement where you can fucking like fuel people's imagination and let them do the same thing you do. I'm a big advocate. Everything I like I talk about and fucking in a big way. And one of the things I've loved most of everything I've done in my entire life, let alone the last 20 years of a career, is fucking podcasting. It is so fucking simple and free. Movies, I'd go tell people like, go be a movie maker, make Clerks, it worked for me. But the thing you never tell people is like, it's fucking expensive, you know, because making movies is like playing hockey. You need ice, that's expensive. You need sticks, you need equipment, you need skates. Like, can't just pick up a ball and a stick and go for it. So now with podcasting, you could literally tell anybody fucking like, you can record a show on your fucking phone or laptop, and who knows what comes from a kid. That was the other part of the experiment. It's like, we made a fucking movie off of this podcast. Anything's possible. They're making TV shows off of podcasts. Like, kids jump in the fucking pool.
Well, yeah, like, I mean, some kid just tweeted me today. He was like, hey, I'm trying stand-up in Portland for the first time because you guys talked about it so much.
Yeah.
You know, like, that happens all the time. But the other important thing to remember is that, I think the other important lesson is the idea that that you can fall on your face and then still get up and make a
tusk.
You
have to fall on your face. You need to fucking fail in order to win. Like, failure is just success training. Very rarely do you fucking rocket something out the park first shot. I got lucky in my career. Clerks, the first thing I ever did. And right away, people were like, holy crap, this is fucking different. And then right after that, I was dealt the very harsh lesson of Mallrats, which I was like, oh, if they like that, they're going to love this. And they're like, go fuck yourself. And it wasn't for another 10 years before the audience was like, no, that movie's actually cool. So then Chasing Amy, my life and career is a series of like Clerks and then Mallrats and then Chasing Amy and then Dogma and then Jay and Silent. There's a period where I was right about here. Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. But then Jersey Girl, and then Clerks 2, and then Zag and Mary, and then Cop Out. So I've been to both ends of the spectrum. It's way cooler when people say nice things. But with this movie, I really didn't give a fuck. Like, I've just reached that point in my career where I don't give a fuck. And that's where some of the coolest art comes from. Most artists get to that point in their career where they're just like, oh, I don't give a fuck
because
anymore.
The important thing about that is that you're not doing it for anyone else.
No.
And once you start chasing what other people like,
which I did for years,
you can get so fucked so fast.
Middle of my career, I spent trying to do what the market would bear. You know, and at one point, Zack and Miri, which is a movie I love dearly, and I was happy to work with Rogan and stuff, but that's a movie that exists solely because I was like, Apatow is being very successful at making the same kind of movie that I was making for fucking 10 years. So I'm going to make that movie again and fucking make me some of that Apatow money. And I was chasing the puck, man. I love that fucking adage. Chasing famey, if you will. Sounds so disgusting.
Thanks, guys.
It was the one porno they ever made of my stuff. That and of Jerks, of course. What did Wayne Gretzky's dad say? He told him when he was trying to teach him to play hockey, he said, don't go where the puck is, go where the puck's going to be. And so for the last few years, I was like, well, where's the puck going to be? Tusk felt like where the puck was going to be, not just because I'm like, well, this is fucking different, but because they always ask for different. They're always like, we hate sequels and remakes. And I was so terrified I was going to go to Toronto and bring something like, you know, we went to the Toronto Film Festival and bring Tusk, which is kind of original. And then they'd be like, not from you, from a talented director. But thankfully, they seemed okay with it. But it did. I got to the point where I'm like, I don't give a fuck. Like, I've been to both ends of the spectrum. I've worked inside a studio and out. I've done everything more than I ever thought I would ever fucking do in this business or any of these businesses over the course of fucking 20 years. So just fucking reboot. Now do what you want. Like, do the same thing that got you here. What got me here was me going like, I want to see a movie about me and my friends. What kind of brought me back, if you will, was me going, I want to see this movie about this walrus thing. And I just want to put in all the shit I like. Like, I love joking around about Canada. Fuck it. I'm going to set it in Canada. Hit somebody. The hockey series I've been working on for fucking a while started as a movie, then became a miniseries. So entrenched in Canada. I've wanted to do Canada for so long. So I'm like, don't wait. Fucking do it now. And it's in Tusk. And that it kicked off this True North trilogy. Now we're going to make two more films. So it begins with Tusk. The second one we already finished three quarters of, Yoga Hosers. And then the third one is Moose Jaws, which is just Jaws with a moose. So three fucking rubber movies. Robert Kurtzman, the guy who did From Dusk Till Dawn and shit, he built our walrus in the movie, which looks fucking sublime. I got to do shit that I wanted to do when I was a kid. Like, when I started making movies, I didn't make the movies that I loved growing up. I made the movie I could make, which was like Clerks. But the movies I loved growing up were rubber movies, man, Reanimator, From Beyond, or David Lynch, or David Cronenberg. The movies I sat around with my friends and be like, this fucked up. Yeah. Isn't that fucked up? And that's the best rating you could give a movie. Not like four stars or two thumbs up. You'd be like, this fucked up. Watch it. Yeah. Give somebody a fucking take.
You got to see this.
You got to see this fucked up.
But it's so important. I think what's really important is why it's important to make the thing that you enjoy that means something to you is because...
You can't guarantee anybody else will give a shit.
And you can't. And so when you're
at
making...
At least you'll like it. Exactly. At least at the end of the day, you'll be like, I made exactly
so
what I wanted to make.
If it tanks, if something tanks and you knew that you were pandering or trying to do something, and then you fucking hate yourself even more. Yeah. But if no one goes to see Tusk, at least you know, like, hey, I don't care. I made this thing that I wanted to
see.
I'd
die on
happy.
That Tusk. This was what I wanted.
Yeah.
But also, it goes to the thing. It's like where it's, you know, if you find yourself saying, wouldn't it be cool if somebody... Or you know what someone should do? It's like if you find yourself saying
be
that all
someone.
Time, yeah.
That like, is you know, that's yeah, the magic
be that,
potion.
Be that someone.
Yeah. Be that magic. That's a magic potion. That's those are the words right there. If you ever hear yourself saying, why don't they?
Yeah.
The next fucking you just end it with an ellipses and go start it. Because you found something so fucking rare in this world, unclaimed real estate. You know how fucking valuable that is? Everything has been fucking done, kids. You go online and you will watch a horse fuck a man. Everything has been fucking done.
And a documentary could, about it.
Yes, yes. Like somebody going like, isn't that fucked up? We're going to make a documentary about it. So when you find something that's like, nobody's on this fucking block of land, or you go through a door nobody's gone through before, because like, who would go through that fucking door? Who wants to go through the man-to-walrus door? Be first in something, because I, if anything I learned from Tusk, man, I haven't gotten reviews like this fucking in years. People are like, oh my God, good or bad, it's fucking different. And that made me so happy. They embraced kind of different, even from the likes of me.
People don't credit themselves with being, you know, interesting in the sense where you go, well, tell me about your life. You know, like, what do you want to talk about? I don't know. You know, my dad was a farmer, my mom, but that's not interesting. Like, no, wait.
Yeah,
you know, like people forget that they
that's
are
what this medium's
they
about.
Are kind of the commodity. It's like you are a unique collection of experiences and molecules that is unlike anything else in the world. And
your
so
story, dude, is the only currency you have in this.
There
life.
Is there is an intersection of there's an intersection of a multitude of ideas that make up you, and if you start exploring those and mashing those up, the more specific you are, the more unique your ideas. And so people just need to recognize that they themselves. Are actually it's not the idea is not out there somewhere.
Yeah.
You have to chase inward, you know, like you shouldn't chase outward because that's where everyone else is.
And that's where the puck is. Like the moment you start going, what does everybody else want? It's like, fuck that. Serve yourself. Be masturbatory. What do you want? Because chances are there's maybe 10,000 people out there think like you. If you keep your budget low enough, like Tusk was under $3 million. You can make the money back in foreign sales and shit like that. Then you can go do something weird. You know, as long as you're fiscally responsible with what you're spending to do the weird or whatever, or do the thing that is that you want to do, you can absolutely do it. And this age of entertainment, so much easier for people to get into than years prior, even when I jumped in. Because back in the day, they wanted you to normalize and sheep it the fuck up. So much so that the note system in the studios was like, it was a laughing stock. It was a joke on late night shows because they would take anything original and homogenize the fuck out of it to appeal to the widest possible audience. Right. And they ain't chasing that dollar anymore because those people don't play those games, man. There's definitely things everybody seems to like, like Big Bang Theory and stuff like that. But the real money is the moment everyone figured out that it's micro, not macro. The moment they're like, wait a second, man, he fucking has this many followers and shit, and they're not spending any money to make that. Like, that's a marketer's dream. You know how much money we got to get that many people to watch one of our fucking TV shows. So suddenly it goes from people going like, we don't want you to fucking be you. Like when John Woo comes to America and they have a test screening for Hard Target and the studio goes like, what's with all the birds and the bullets? You know, they want to take all the Woo out of Woo. Like they don't want to de-woo you anymore. Now they want you to
woo
be
woo.
Woo be woo. Woo you be woo. You. It's very, very true at this point because now your voice is the currency. Like they could get 1,000 people to execute a comedy, a generic comedy or a generic action movie, but a perspective, a fucking point of view, one that's already covered, followed or something like that, that's huge. Doesn't have to be somebody that's just like, oh, everybody loves this motherfucker worldwide. They're like, what do you got? How many people? No, 100,000?
And it's looping back around to what you were saying with like, you know, the basically audition tapes are like Vine and Twitter and YouTube. And because, I mean, you know, in the old days, and by this I mean like 6-7 years ago, you know, the agencies were essentially the platform because they were the ones who would deliver, oh, you need to see this person, you need to see this person. And now it's social media and someone's kid going, hey, I fucking love this guy. And then they're, oh, interesting.
Agents so playing catch up.
It's basically, you know, so much of the business has become unintentionally crowdsourced.
Yeah.
And so that is a very powerful shift.
Democratic. I mean, sadly, every once in a while, it means you get a Justin Bieber, but it means that like there are a bunch of people out there who are fucking seriously talented who are going to get a shot that never would have had a shot.
There's a wider net for potential meritocracy,
and everybody sits there and they always go, "How do I get in? How do I get in?" And it's like, dude, your fingertips. Like, start with your Twitter account, start with your Facebook, start with your Instagram, start with the YouTube. Like, start building something.
Literally nothing to lose. Yeah. Literally nothing to lose.
You have fun doing it. Like, you'll have a blast fucking doing it. You'll learn doing it. You'll get better at it because you just do it over and over again. Malcolm Gladwell, 10,000 hours. And all that shit. But also, you never fucking know. You never know. It could become a fucking movie. It could become a TV show. It could become, maybe it doesn't become one of those things, but becomes the things that saves your fucking life where you're like, I get up every morning just to fucking sit here and talk to my friends on a podcast. Like, you don't know what it's going to be.
Either way, you'll have fun in the process.
Bang. And what's better than that? Like, dude, I could point to amazing things that have happened to me and that I've done over the course of 20 years, but if you line them all up, I could still say, like, I'd much rather sit down with, like, any number of the people that I podcast with because I know I'm going to get the freest, cheapest high on the planet. I'm going to fucking laugh till my stomach hurts. And people pay for that kind of shit. And if I can get that for free off of somebody I know and it becomes a race about, like, I'm going to make you laugh, you're going to make me laugh. That's what the fuck are we doing this for not that?
Yeah. You know what's fun to me about you is that you are when you listen to everything that you say – there's a lot of insight and they're really, it's like you somehow, I wonder if this is a conscious thing where you go, oh, Malcolm Gladwell, 10,000 hours and shit. It's like you almost, it's like you're like,
guys, like you diluted my entire life's work down to,
no,
shit.
Not that, but it's,
fuck you. But you learned nothing in 10,000 hours.
At the core of it is the idea of like, oh, he read Blink.
Yeah.
Or Outliers. Actually, that was Outliers. He read Outliers, and you know, like that you are there is academia behind what you say, but you frame it in such a way that's very relatable. Like you remind I hope you take this as a compliment.
Oh boy,
never good when you say that.
No offense, but
beef Wellington with tater tots.
Oh, I like that.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like there's a really choice piece of meat right there, but it's surrounded by tots, so it's like, oh, it's totally relatable.
It's fun to
eat. It's not. It doesn't feel like out of my league.
First of all, it's a mushroom compote, and then it's a
you're a mushroom compote.
It's a good job. Tater tots.
What's that compote?
You're describing a Wellington.
I can't hear any besides all the mushroomy stuff coming out of you.
Wait a second.
Why are you high fiving?
This mushroom thinks he can talk.
Did you just call him on the mushroom compo?
Yeah.
And you called them first on the mushroom
compo? Well, I called them on describing a
food nerd. Busted. Foodie.
Gordon Ramsay.
Well, he makes a hell of a beef well.
I know he did, actually. The other thing is that you do have an incredible amount of knowledge and understanding of the inner workings of this business.
Yeah. You stick around something long enough and pay attention. And that kind of shit in the beginning was interesting. Like, I used to love reading the trades and stuff, and now not so much. Now I follow by default, but not as much as it used to be religion. Like, get up and consume all this stuff about other people doing things because it makes you want to do your own shit.
Sure.
Particularly back in the day. Not so much anymore. It's not really a motivator for me.
That's the healthy approach to competition.
Yeah. Yes.
Some people people,
as opposed to like, why the fuck?
Yeah. Competition is very healthy as long as it motivates you to raise your game of excellence. But competition is bad when it's like, I'm gonna burn that guy to the ground because he does something I want. It's like you see someone doing something that you that like. A little bit of jealousy in the sense of like creative jealousy, like, oh, I wish I'd thought of that. I'm going to make something that I think is really cool, but we can all succeed. Like, there's no reason that we all can't succeed.
You've got to be shitty about it because the human nature is to be shitty, right? We gravitate toward the negative. It's just, it's who we are. And particularly in the internet, we're allowed to be anonymous about it. So naturally, we get even shittier.
That's control. You can, when you exercise control, well, there's a perception that you're exercising control over something if you tear it down. It's right. Sort of like the, In Candide,
mm-hmm.
he's
and shit.
Candide and shit.
There you go. Throw it away. Throw it away.
I think it was Candide, but basically, he meets this guy who basically just shits on everything, and he's like, "Wow, you know." And the main character is kind of adult. He's naive, and so he's like, "Wow, you." You know, the stomach that can never be satisfied, whatever the quote is. Basically, the man who can never be satisfied by anything surely must be the smartest man. He's like, you're fucking stupid. Right. You know, like he basically just flat out says, that's dumb.
That's why I say if people like, and I've got, you know, over the years, I've had a lot of fucking haters and shit. And I'm always like, why not like hating on me, dude? Like all the time spent to write that fucking, you know, blog or whatever the fuck. You could have like started something. Mm-hmm. Like if you're going to use me negatively, use me thusly. If this fat piece of shit can make it work, there's no reason why I can't be 1,000 times more successful. But they don't go that way. It's much easier to just be like, fuck them. Fuck them.
Yeah, fuck like them and spell fuck wrong. Like the Clerks poster that I got when I was 16. I'm packing it this week, and it is moving into the house that I paid for with writing.
Oh, my God.
So it is like...
Aww, compote!
Little compote has made it all the way to Massachusetts. out into a...
He's mushroomed into a successful individual. That's really sweet.
He's a real fun guy.
But it's like...
Thank you. I know. I'm sure I had to get in there one before the show.
I'm gonna make a movie based on your life, Compote.
But it's the only that's the last of the 16-year-old posters that I
really
get from when
still
I was
why that one.
Old. Because
you're like, if this motherfucker...
Did you ever have him sign it?
It's signed. Because oh, I ordered it from
the website?
From VSQ. That's funny.
No, I wanted you to go, that's not signed by me.
Yeah, no, that's a machine. Wasn't me.
but I always like that. The Clerks was always just this like...
It makes you want to make a flick, man.
Yeah,
that was like, that, honestly,
my first essay in college was about Clerks. And was,
really?
Yes. Yeah, and I don't know where
Matt,
the fuck
you don't make me cry.
What was it about?
It was about just the idea of like... I framed it around how Terminator 2, I like... It was weirdly framed. It was like...
like Terminator 2 is a better movie, but Clerks is utterly watchable.
Yeah, I remember being framed around Terminator 2 and just like how long it must have taken to make Terminator 2 and how I got just as much enjoyment out of Clerks.
By the way, it was just the... Do you know who we're podcasting at 6 tonight?
I know you're Robert Patrick.
Robert Patrick. I gotta bringing it back around to T2.
Right to T2.
But that's a good point because like I saw Clerks and like it got me thinking in that like the way that Kevin's talking about. It's like almost like punk, which is like, you know, all these guys that started punk bands in like the late 70s, early 80s. They were like, oh wait, that's attainable. I can figure
that
out.
Yeah, it's almost like it's like
you know, four chords count.
Yeah, yeah.
I can fucking do four chords.
All of a sudden, like if you you know like all of a sudden all the barriers lift off the crown jewels and you're like, I could just grab that.
Yeah. even like the Minutemen, when they talk about when they started writing songs, they were saying like, oh, you like, no one's saying you have to do this with music. You could go from this to this, and a song could be, you know, 45 seconds, it could be 18 minutes, you know, like, it's like no one's telling you what to do.
Fuck with structure, man. I mean, that's what art is. The more you fuck with structure, the more people enjoy it and stuff. Wreck some shop, man. Like, that's what they want to see. Everyone's so fucking tired of the sameness and normalcy. And not just normalcy, like, go make a Walrus movie, but just do something different. Like, don't worry about what they're doing. Everyone's always just like, what do they want? Fuck what they want. What do you want? Because I guarantee you, a bunch of people want that as well. And that's why it's a great time to be doing shit. Like, in the beginning, I loved one of the byproducts of Clerks that I never expected but utterly loved was, aside from it made me fucking rich, was the fact that like it a bunch of people, it launched a bunch of ships or a bunch of cats that were like, if this fucking counts, I want to make a movie and shit. And that's like, the only reason I felt bad about that is because film's expensive. Not everyone's ever going to fucking have the success of Clerks. But years later with Tusk, man, like aside from the movie being born from a podcast and being about a podcaster and stuff like that, just having and having Johnny Depp say the word podcaster, which really legitimizes our medium in some weird way, like just throwing that movie out there and through all the press that it's getting and shit like that, I know for a fact some motherfuckers out there who are don't even know the word and are going to be like, what's a podcaster? And then they're going to go listen, not even to mine, but whatever the fuck. But then they're going to go like, oh my God, a podcast is literally just sitting around talking with your fucking friends. Like, there's no fucking rules. That's allowed. Yeah,
that's
and boom, what, they jump yeah. in the
that,
pool.
That's why I yeah. started, when I started this one, I had been putting it off for like a couple years.
Yes.
Because I had worked in radio. And so I was like, oh, but it's got to have segments. And I was thinking radio. And then, you know, and I had that epiphany one day where I was like, why can't I just talk to people like the way that comics talk backstage at shows? Like, why right. can't we just talk? Yeah. And if no one likes it, then it doesn't matter. As long as we're having fun, then that's, you know, then at least it's our thing and no one can fuck with it.
Right.
And it was that exact same moment. And those are usually, you know, when you have those ideas where it feels like everything in your head is aligning and has that clicking moment where everything locks into place, those are usually good things to do, but don't wait too long to do them because yeah. sometimes
somebody is having a brilliant idea at the same fucking moment.
Or it was, you know, yes. it needed to happen at that moment, or you might change if you wait too long, or the world might change and then it's not appropriate anymore. But
dude, I went in six months, we went from that conversation on the podcast to being on a set. The next movie we did, Yoga Hosers, the first draft of the script was 420, appropriately enough. So April 20th, we were shooting that movie by August 19th.
Oh,
and
wow.
So that's less than 4 months. That's the fastest turnaround I've had. And that's the only way I'm going to work now. Now, there are a bunch of grouses out there who'll be like, that's not responsible art. Bullshit. As long as I keep my fucking budget low, yeah. that's responsible. The most responsible thing I could do as an artist is never fucking wait. Because there are a lot of good ideas that I've had over time where I'm like, I'll get around to it. And I never did. And somebody did something equally as cool, if not fucking cooler.
Right.
So from now on, if I like it enough where I'm like, I'm ready to commit and I'm baked all the time and shit. So as long as I'm constantly stoned and I'm never like, wait, what am I? Walrus movie, you know, coming out of consciousness or something.
I could just the producer is like shoving weed in your mouth.
We thought this was a good idea.
Get a stone again. Yeah, we're like, in the middle of production.
Whimsy, everybody.
it's like Mr. Burns in the X-Files episode.
As they told us in Dune, dude, fear is the mind killer. And the longer you wait, fear will creep in and be like, don't do that. Don't do that. Somebody's probably yeah. already
done
that.
By the way, if you are the type of person that goes, fuck, I had that idea. Fuck, I had that idea too. Like, that's a sign.
Yeah, oh my yeah. God. Like, you're about to break.
You
so the next time you have
it.
An idea, yeah, like, just make it for
yeah.
real.
Make it.
I'm sorry, Miss Jackson. Just make it for real. I thought you leaned into the mic. I thought you were
going
to join me for a
second. I was going to.
It was a real Mosher moment. I was like, he's going to sing.
I get that joke.
No, people.
That was a real inside joke.
And I'm very excited that you
watch Scott Mosher podcast.
Yeah, I'm not going to say, not even for the people that listen to the podcast.
An audience of two.
And you start whittling down all of
those. Those are the best jokes, man. A whole comedy club is silent, but Matt's like,
I get that.
And you're doing At Midnight tonight as well.
I am. But I'm not like competing. Like
yeah,
I was. Am
you
I?
Are.
You
yeah.
Somebody
you
told
on.
Me I was walking on.
No, you're walking no. on and
you're
being
walking
on the contestant
and being on.
Yeah,
yeah.
yeah.
All right. Because that's
and
what I was like, oh, I'm not competing.
You
so
and Justin Long
Justin.
And Jen Kirkman.
That's
I'll be. I'll be in the room with you. We'll
right on. I look. Fun. I wanted to compete. I was happy to.
You are.
I thought for a minute that was just going to be like waving.
No.
I'm ready to fucking give answers because I take this shit seriously. I got an edge. I need to win.
Competitive
at midnight.
Do you feel like do you feel like that the weed kind of like takes
yes.
some of the that off a little
oh,
bit?
I thought I could pre-answer the question. No, what the weed does is the weed, because I've been thinking about it for years, and it doesn't make you any more creative. It doesn't make you any better. What it does is just removes the fear. You just sit there. Normally, you're like, oh, I want to try this, but what if it doesn't work? What if they say shit? And then you're just like, who gives a fuck? I'm going to die. Let's give it a shot, because you don't want to be there like Yoga Hosers, which is a movie spun out of Tusk, is a movie that has my 15-year-old kid in it. And the thing that was my mind killer on that was like, you know, the guy that you sit next to every week on Hollywood Babylon, Ralph Garman, like shreds any fucking person in the business who brings their kid. Yes.
Though Linklater's kid was one of the, Boyhood. I think Linklater's daughter was great in that.
She was great.
Nepotism is what they go after you for. And that's, I literally sat there going, like, first I was like, oh my God, I could build a whole movie. Girls are in Tusk for like one fucking scene and they crushed it and they'd never acted before. And I loved the scene. When I was done shooting, I cut it together and I kept watching it over and over again. I kept showing my wife. I was like, why do you think I like it so much? They're like wearing the red smocks. Like, I'm so drawn to this. Is it because it's our daughter? What? And she's like, Kevin, you're a fucking idiot. It's two people standing behind a counter at a convenience store. And I was like, oh my God, you're right. That's why I love it so much. So I sat there going, I could build a whole performance, a whole movie around their performance level. They play two anti-American girls who like barely ever look up from their phones, like true 15-year-old girls. So I was like, if I just took that performance and surrounded it with a bunch of really fucking funny, talented people, I can make a whole fucking movie with my kid. Like, this would crack me up because it's a weird spin-off of Tusk where it's not a sequel, but it's what happens in Winnipeg a year after the events.
It's
of
like
Tusk.
The Cornetto trilogy in the sense where it's like they're all
It's more like the Buskew trilogy.
Yeah, it's more like this universe.
It goes back to Buskew universe. Yeah. Like I sat there looking at Marvel, going like, oh, they have an interconnected series of movies. I remember how fun that was. So I was like, I'm going to go back and do it with this and stuff. I was like, I'm going to do it. I talked to my wife. I talked to Lily Rose's mom, Vanessa. I was like, would you mind if I wrote a whole movie for the girls? She goes, you would not do that. I said, I do a lot of things. I'm stoned. So I wrote it. And then for a moment, I was like, you know what? Don't do it. Because every motherfucker who hates your guts on the internet is just going to use it as a fucking target.
But who gives a shit?
That's what I said myself. I said, oh my God, I don't want to be on my deathbed and be like, I should have made Yoga Hosers and die. Like, I want to be like, I did make Yoga Hosers.
Because an angry guy that I don't know in Nebraska told me I shouldn't have employed my daughter because it's dumb.
Because it's dumb. Yeah. And honestly, if I had listened to that inner voice, which when I was younger, that inner voice, the outer voice of somebody else that infects your inner voice, I probably might have let it fucking second guess me out of the whole thing years ago. But now weed, I'm like, fuck you. I'm going to die. And I want to make a movie with my kid. It's about Canadian teenage girls. And then I sat there making the movie and I'm like, this is everything. This is the movie that I wanted to see when I was a 15-year-old girl. Like, this is perfect, man. And it's born in a blaze and there's no fear. Like, there's no sort of like, fuck, they'll go after me first. I know someone's going to go after. Someone will always shit in my
mouth. That's old nerdy kid baggage, though. When you grew up being kind of socially ostracized, and you're like, they're not going to think I'm cool. And then at a certain point, you go, wait, well, who is that guy who's shitting on me? Is he the arbiter of what's okay and what's not?
Well,
I don't even fucking know that guy.
Maybe you could move the line of what cool is. Like, when we were kids, cool was not what we fucking do now. Cool was like athletes and sports and shit like that.
And wearing a leather jacket and going into a diner with a bunch of underage kids and banging on a jukebox and it turns on.
Don't forget being really good at pinball.
He was really good at pinball, too.
And made business transactions in a toilet.
That's he spent a lot of time in a glory hole room.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
And it was the age of TV where you couldn't show any toe tapping because people would know what that meant. So I'm just going to assume that
Fonz was about this in the podcast
on the
before?
Down low. I'm sure we all did. If we've done so many podcasts, sooner or later, I'm sure somewhere over the course of
catalog of our 600 episodes.
Wait, I have the because I do have the Fonzie is gay theory. Which is, you know, leather.
Quick, throw it out there.
Fuck it. Leather, it's always, like, especially
and
at that period
of time. And what do you say when you get fucked in the mouth? Hey!
No, but we can add that one. But the idea that he was so overtly like, look at all these girls, and they related to him so well.
Very true.
He understood how to talk
to
them.
But he was tight with the boys.
Yeah.
Like, he always had time for Richie, who was a certified fucking nerd, along with Potsy and Ralph, and he tolerated them because he was just like, the sweet taste of Potsy in my mouth.
I think
the
one
dream
day,
and the internal monologue of Arthur Fonzarelli.
Yeah, I think Fonzarelli, which I think
I want them to sit on it.
And they won't.
He's got two thumbs for two other
perfectly
guys.
Manicured.
That's why he tried to fucking kill himself jumping over the chicken stand, because he's like, I can't be me.
Yeah, at that time, perfectly
tried to
manicured.
Kill himself years later with a shark as well.
Yep.
Although in California, it was after the California trip that he started to be more him, and the show went down the hill.
No, that's when they brought on Ted McGinley.
And the kid. Remember he had the poltergeist kid as a kid, and it wasn't his kid, but his girlfriend's kid. And
they always introduce a kid. But that theory to me makes Fonzie like a million times cooler. Mm. That there's this like this other side of him. That
in the 21st century, absolutely.
He's always winking to the camera in a way like, they don't know. And you know who knows? You know who knows? Fucking Mrs. C. She's the only person who knows. And that's why they're so like bonded together, because she knows Arthur,
and that's why Mr. Cunningham lets it ride, because he's like, he's never gonna fuck her, not unless she grows a dick.
No, I don't think Mr. C knows.
You think he's still like Fonzie gets?
I think
all the
he'd
girls.
Be like, what? Like, I don't think he. I don't
you think
he'd
throw him out. You see the dark side of Mr. C, where he's like, I don't want any of your homosexual antics. The Bible says.
I mean, he's still
on a very special happy day.
He's still in early 60s. Like, that's when Mr. C.
You know why I sell hardware? Because nails went into the hands of my Savior, Jesus Christ.
And if I could have just had the perfect hammer to pull the nails out.
He was a carpenter, and he would have used my help. Get your dick-sucking mouth out of my garage.
I sent my only son, my first son, Chuck, to war. To defend
he
the right
for your right to what? Suck a dick over my car? No! Marion, get him out!
You take that gay shit out of my house, Marion!
They
I'm
scramble
burn the garage
through the front door onto the front lawn, fucking throwing fisticuffs. Richie's like, no, Dad!
Please.
I don't need no homophobia. And then he just drives off.
No, as he goes off, he goes, gay.
Gay. I've done a lot of things, but this was the biggest shark I ever jumped. Yep, so I think we solved Happy Days.
Well, there you go.
Those were the happiest days of all, right?
What's a synonym for happy?
Gay.
Yay,
gay days.
Yeah.
At Disneyland.
Yep.
You're at Disneyland.
Well, we solved that. And when does Tusk come out? I know the premiere's tonight.
Tusk comes out on Friday. On September 19th. So
September 19th. This podcast will go up tomorrow.
All right. So Friday just it'll be advance. Out, man. They could see it. It's playing 600 screens across the country, which is one of the... Like, I thought it was a pretty healthy number for a fucking movie about a guy.
That is a good number.
To a walrus. Yeah. I expected, like, New York, L.A., and that was it.
You know what's good about...
24, they were like, 600
screens is good because it's a lot, but it's not 2,000, so people don't have the magnifying glass.
Like, there was one theater where nobody went. Like, if you've got 600 theaters, chances are, like, it only improves your per-screen average.
That's
but
right.
If we didn't get a good per-screen average this weekend... Imagine how much worse it would have been on 1,000 screens.
Yeah.
So I'm cool with 600.
I imagine it's a movie that you want to see with a bunch of people, too.
It feels like that. I mean, we went to Toronto and we played at the midnight screening, and it was religious. Like, it was probably the best screening of a movie I've made that I've ever intended in my life. So, it plays with that kind of
thing. Yeah, like, I was talking to Pat Healy when I was like, I'm going to watch Cheap Thrills tonight. And he's like, just... Like, invite people over or go to a screening. Mm. Like, it's better with the crowd.
Mm.
And so, yeah, definitely, like, it's...
Yeah, so, and like Jonas said, take all your friends. Go see Tusk. Don't go alone. Only losers go alone to the movies.
Take all your friends and walrus people to see Tusk. As soon as you can.
Just say walrus yes. It's kind of exciting. It's neat, man. And I feel like... You know, fucking, I love this medium. I love podcasting. And the fact that it's just like the first movie based on a podcast is one of those dopey things that I'm like, I got that. As I lay dying, I'll be like, that's what I did.
I made it
never
happen.
I never got an Oscar, but I had the first
podcast. I was able to belt a movie out of the podcast room.
TV show, movie, I don't know what's next, man. A musical, writing a play based on
the podcast.
And we got
to catch up. We have a TV show, but now we got to do a movie.
So we got to do a movie.
Yeah, Chris needs to catch up. Chris needs another job.
I need to really. I know. You know the last.
I take a great sense of pride every time I see you do yet another fucking TV show or conquering some other aspect of the medium. I always fucking think about you. Wrote a very nice blog piece about like I went to Smodcastle and I was like, that's what I want. And fucking that's where Nerdist Industries started.
That's where Nerdmelt came from. Was going. I mean, that was the moment where I was like, Oh, you can do this.
You could just do this. Yes. Why couldn't you do this?
It was your you could do this moment.
Yeah, it was very. It was.
I tried to convince him to go to Lovitz Podcast Theater, but he was like,
it all just fell into place. So thank you for that. And no, I'm awesome. So glad.
And that was not me tooting my own horn, but every time I fucking see you do something, I'm like, that fucking he got it. Like that dude sat in a room and was just like, oh, fucking, you can do this.
But it took years and years and years of failing and getting knocked down and being rejected before I was like, oh, I think if I'm going to want to do anything, I guess I just have to fucking do it.
But look what happened. You did that. You did the thing you wanted.
And it's so much more rewarding than if someone else had hired me for their thing.
Exactly.
So thank you. Thank you, Kevin, for being...
See how I did that? I got some gratitude.
It was nice, though.
I didn't mean to do it. I feel shitty. I feel dirty.
No, you shouldn't feel dirty.
I should, right? Sorry. No. But I do. I honestly feel sensitive, and I don't want that to sound condescending, but right on, man. Fucking he was in the trenches with me and shit like that. That was cool.
Well, and that's everything that you and I did, anyone listening could do if, you know, that's it.
Stop listening to us. Please don't, because we need to listen.
Listen and then
we
go.
We need the earballs, but then do your own thing.
Yeah, exactly.
And subscribe, always.
subscribe.
Audible podcast / Phoebe. Thanks.
Enjoy a burrito, everyone.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
For more than two centuries, the White House has been the stage for some of the most dramatic scenes in American history. Inspired by the hit podcast American History Tellers, Wondery and William Morrow present the new book, The Hidden History of the White House. Each chapter will bring you inside the fierce power struggles, the world-altering decisions, and shocking scandals that have shaped our nation. You'll be there when the very foundations of the White House are laid in 1792, and you'll watch as the British burn it down in 1814. Then you'll hear the intimate conversations between FDR and Winston Churchill as they make plans to defeat Nazi forces in 1941. And you'll be in the Situation Room when President Barack Obama approves the raid to bring down the most infamous terrorist in American history. Pre-order The Hidden History of the White House now in hardcover or digital editions wherever you get your books.